We are continuing this sermon series on love, and so for the past few months, we've been working through 1 Corinthians chapter 13, one of the most famous passages in the Bible, the most often quoted passage at wedding ceremonies, a passage that even non-Christians and secular people look to as a work of brilliant poetry. About love, and we're using this chapter as a roadmap to help us think deeply, carefully, week after week about why we need love, what it looks like to have loving relationships, and how love is central to being human. It's bigger than just marriage or romance or relationship with the opposite sex. It is essential to making us who we are. So today we're going to be looking at how love is not irritable. It's a very practical part of this chapter, and we're going to be looking at two passages, 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verses 4 through 8, and then we're going to look at Mark chapter 6, verses 30 to 44, which tells us the story of Jesus feeding the 5,000. This is the reading of God's Word. Love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. As for prophecies, they will pass away. As for tongues, they will cease. As for knowledge, it will pass away. Mark chapter 6, verses 30 through 44. The apostles returned to Jesus and told him all that they had done and taught. And he said to them, "Come away by yourselves to a desolate place and rest a while." For many were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat. And they went away in the boat to a desolate place by themselves. Now many saw them going and recognized them, and they ran there on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. When he went ashore, he saw a great crowd, and he had compassion on them, because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things. And when it grew late, his disciples came to him and said, "This is a desolate place, and the hour is now late. Send them away to go into the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat." But he answered them, "You give them something to eat." And they said to him, "Shall we go and buy 200 denarii worth of bread and give it to them to eat?" And he said to them, "How many loaves do you have? Go and see." And when they had found out, they said, 5 and 2 fish. Then he commanded them all to sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups by hundreds and by fifties. And taking the 5 loaves and 2 fish, he looked up to heaven and said a blessing and broke the loaves and gave them to the disciples to set before the people. And he divided the 2 fish among them all, and they all ate and were satisfied. And they took up 12 baskets full of broken pieces and of the fish. And those who ate the loaves were 5,000 men. May God add his blessings to the reading of his word. Tom Erickson had the misfortune of having a phone number that was one digit different from Dial-A-Tale. Dial-A-Tale was this program that public libraries ran back in the 1980s, and what you would do is, if you were a small child and you wanted to hear a story, you could dial this phone number, and it would dial you into your local library, and someone would read you a fairy tale, a story, a children's story, over the phone. And so Tom Erickson got phone call after phone call. This is back in the day before you could block phone calls, before caller ID, and he would get these phone calls from children asking for a story. And at first he tried to explain to them, you have the wrong number, which is hard to explain to a young child expecting to be told a story. And no matter how often he told them, you've got the wrong number, here's the number that you need, the calls didn't stop coming. Now he could have done a number of things at this point. He could have changed his phone number. He could have just hung up on the kids, right? Like, he hears the voice of a child and he just hangs up on them. He could have done a lot of different things, but he didn't do any of those. What he did was he got a copy of the Three Little Pigs, put it down next to his phone, and every time he got a phone call from a child, he would read a fairy tale to them. It's a really touching story, isn't it? Like, don't you wish you had a Tom Erickson in your life to tell your children fairy tale stories whenever they wanted? It's a touching story because deep down, we all want someone who can love us when we are irritable. And that's what we long for. That's what we long for from our parents. That's what we long for from our significant others. That's what we long for from our friends and even our coworkers or our neighbors. We want this kind of love that isn't easily irritable. When we are being irritable, people are patient with us and they show us kindness and grace. And love like this is so rare. It's almost unbelievable that anybody would actually do this consistently. And as you hear this story, maybe some of you are thinking, I would not have done that. I would not have gotten a book and read a fairy tale to every child that called me asking for one. Well, today, we're going to look at how Jesus used his irritable disciples, and they are very irritable. They're really annoyed in this passage, and he uses them to show extraordinary compassion, extraordinary love to people who are also in an irritating situation. In this story, God shows us that the love we're looking for, it's real. It's real. It's not a fairy tale. It's not a pipe dream. We all have access for it, and it's available to us in Jesus. It's available for us to experience here this morning. It's available for us to share with one another. And we're going to look at this in three parts. We're going to see the irritable disciples, the compassionate shepherd, and our infinite resources. That's the outline for today. The irritable disciples, the compassionate shepherd, and our infinite resources. Let's start with the disciples. Mark sets the scene for us by showing us that this was going to be a bad day for Jesus' disciples. This story of the feeding of the 5,000 is a huge inconvenience. The timing is so bad because the disciples just got back from a mission trip. And if you've ever been on a mission trip, you probably know that day when you get back, you're just wiped out. You have no energy, no time for anyone or anything. They're exhausted. They were so busy, the Bible tells us, that during this mission trip, they didn't even have time to eat. And so they're not only exhausted, they're hungry, they're physically weak, they're emotionally weak, they're probably spiritually weak. And Jesus decides it's time for a retreat, which is the appropriate thing to do after you've been on a mission trip. Take a couple days off, go somewhere else. And rest was particularly difficult for Jesus and his disciples, so they went to a desolate place, someplace away from civilization, somewhere where no one would find them, away from the hustle and bustle of life, somewhere where they could rest. Now imagine how relieved the disciples must have been when Jesus told them, I'm going to take you on a retreat. They got in this boat, they're sailing on the Sea of Galilee, and when they stepped on that boat, that moment must have felt like a moment of relief. Their muscles must have relaxed and loosened up. Their heart rate must have slowed down, and they must have been already thinking, this is going to be a great retreat. We finally get to rest. We finally get to just be with Jesus and enjoy one another. The boat must have been buzzing with chatter of how they would spend their time together with Jesus at this retreat site. But the retreat was not to be, because a crowd saw them get on the boat and they knew where they were going. They knew they were going on a retreat. They knew this retreat site. They knew this desolate place that Jesus was going to take them. And so a crowd of people followed the boat by foot, and by the time they arrived at their destination, there were already 5,000 men waiting for them. And scholars, you probably heard this before, if you've ever heard this passage preached, New Testament scholars believe that there were up to 10 or 20,000 people there, because the 5,000 is only a head count of the men. But this was not a men's retreat, right? Like there were probably women and even children there. And so there were anywhere from 10 to 20,000 people waiting at the shore as Jesus and his disciples arrived at their retreat site. And Jesus decides to invite them all into the retreat. And he begins to teach them. And the other Gospels tell us in Matthew and in Luke that Jesus not only taught them, but he also healed them. And so the disciples are helping, right? It's like a medical mission trip. They're not just listening in the crowd, listening to Jesus teach. They're helping people. They're finding out why they're there. They're finding out what they need from Jesus. They're finding out what kind of illnesses people have. And they're working. Their retreat has turned into just another mission trip. And they're surrounded by needy people who need them and who need Jesus. After several hours, the 12 disciples start getting angsty. It's getting late. And it didn't look like Jesus had a plan for dinner. He wasn't going to send them away. So they come to him. Look at verse 35. They tell Jesus, "This is a desolate place. The hour is now late. Send them away to go into the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat." You hear the irritation in their voices. The disciples are irritated. They couldn't handle it anymore. They'd already given up their retreat. They helped Jesus care for this crowd. They supported Jesus as he taught them, as he cared for these people. But they were not going to give up dinner. That's where they drew the line. They told Jesus, "Send them away. We're hungry. We've done enough." In a lot of ways, their irritability made sense, right? If you were in their shoes, wouldn't you act the same way? I'm pretty sure that I would. They were tired. They were hungry. They had been working hard. The crowd interrupted their retreat. It was almost dinner time. Telling people to go eat on their own isn't unreasonable. But it wasn't loving either. You see, this crowd, they traveled by foot to get to this retreat site while the disciples traveled by boat. If you think about it, the people in this crowd, they must have been even more hungry than the disciples were. They must have been even more tired than the disciples were. But none of them were asking what was for dinner. None of them were asking for food. Why? Because they were so desperate to be with Jesus. They were so hungry to learn from Jesus. They wanted more of Jesus. The disciples were irritated by how much the people wanted Jesus. Irritability is our inability to see other people's needs and to minimize other people's needs while exaggerating our own needs. Irritability is like having a short fuse. Sometimes we say that irritable people have a short fuse. What does that mean? It means that irritable people are like a stick of dynamite that will explode too quickly. You never know when an irritable person is going to lose it. You don't know when an irritable person is going to blow up, but you can count on them blowing up too quickly every single time. The Greek word in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 5 for irritable literally means easily provoked or easily angered. Irritability is rushing to anger. It's being overly critical. It's being easily frustrated. Irritability has little tolerance for discomfort. When the moment somebody makes us feel uncomfortable, we hit the wall, we hit our limit, and we say, "That's enough." Irritability has no tolerance for disagreement. When people disagree with us and don't let us have our way, we say, no, that's enough. Irritability has no tolerance for dissatisfaction. When people take away our satisfaction and rob us of our satisfaction, we turn against them. And what this story shows us is that the source of irritability is not irritable people, it's our irritable, restless hearts. We get irritated by the things that people say. We get irritated by the way people act. We get irritated. Sometimes we get irritated by the way people eat. Do you have to eat that way? Do you have to? Could you eat with your mouth closed, please? We get irritated by the way people drive. We get irritated by the way that people express themselves. We get irritated by people who are bad at their jobs. We get irritated by people who have different cultural expectations than the cultural expectations that we have. We get irritated by foreigners. We get irritated by the way people practice their faith. We get irritated by people at church for the way that they worship, for the way that they do things, for what, because they do too much, because they do too little. And we see this, we get irritated because we lack love. Because love is not irritable, and we see this clearly in the compassion of Jesus. This brings us to the second part of today's passage, the compassionate shepherd. Jesus didn't have to invite this crowd to join the retreat. He could have ditched them if he wanted to. In fact, there are other times in his life, in the Gospels, where Jesus does that. He successfully ditches people to spend private devotional time with the Father. He could have sent them away once they reached the shore. This is a man who had the authority to cast out demons. But Jesus doesn't do any of that. He invites them to come closer. And in that moment, Jesus forgets his own needs. Jesus has to be hungry too. He's starving too. He's exhausted too. But he forgets his own needs to focus on the needs of this crowd. Why? The Bible tells us because he had compassion on them. One of the remarkable things about Jesus is that he always had compassion for people. The Greek word for compassion only appears with Jesus in the entire New Testament. It was his thing. It was one of his defining characteristics. Jesus was compassionate in a way that no one else was. And this Greek word literally means to be moved in the guts, which in the ancient world was what people thought your heart was. Your heart was in your guts. And Jesus was moved. He was moved deep inside of him, in his guts, in his heart. And as he looked at the crowd waiting for them on the shore, the disciples felt annoyed, but Jesus was moved. He was overwhelmed with compassion. Why? Why was Jesus so moved with compassion? Well, Mark tells us this too. He tells us that Jesus saw them as a sheep without a shepherd. What does that mean? That means that Jesus saw that he was the shepherd and they were the sheep. Why is that important? It's important because we tend to think of compassion as a personal choice. Right, you see a homeless person on the road and you can choose to show them compassion. You could choose to give them a bottled water or some money, or you could choose to buy them some food or to just have a conversation with them and pray for them, or you could choose not to. We think of compassion as a personal choice. But sometimes there is no choice. For example, a mother has a moral obligation to be compassionate to her baby. We have a word for mothers who have no compassion for their babies. We call that neglect. It's criminal. It's immoral. It's unethical. There are times in our lives where compassion is not a choice, but an obligation. And when Jesus says, I am the shepherd and they are my sheep, they are like sheep without a shepherd, Jesus is saying, I have no choice. I am obligated to show them compassion. I am obligated to show them love. He's saying, that he has no option except to be compassionate because his relationship with this people is a special relationship, like the relationship between a mother and her child. It, in biblical terms, it is a covenant relationship. Covenants are basically love, obligatory love. That's what a covenant is. A covenant is a legal document that establishes obligatory love, like the love between a husband and wife when they get married, or a love, you know, you don't actually say vows when you have a child, but it's, you don't, almost don't need to, because you understand implicitly that you have a moral obligation to love your child. There's no choice. Obligatory love, covenant love. And this is what God is showing us, that we have a God, we have a creator who bound himself, who obligated himself to love us. We have a God who obligated himself to show us compassion. And so when we are needy, when we're broke, when we're being annoying, when we're being irritating, God doesn't throw us aside. He doesn't say, I don't need to help you. I choose not to show you compassion. He has no choice. He is covenant bound, the way a shepherd is covenant bound to show compassion for his sheep. The way that a shepherd is covenant bound to leave the 99 to pursue the one lost sheep. God is covenant bound, obligated to love us because he chooses to. And that's how he chooses to love us, with this covenant obligatory love. Jesus had compassion on them. And so when they arrived at the shore, he gathered them together. He started teaching them. He started healing them. And he did this for several hours. And when it was time to eat, he said, I am not going to send you away. I know you're hungry. And you haven't even brought up food. You're so hungry because you have a spiritual hunger that is bigger than your physical hunger. And I'm going to satisfy both. Sometimes following Jesus means that you will have to show compassion to people that you don't want to show compassion to, because you have a Savior who is compassionate. That's who he is. And he has shown you compassion. And he has compassion for those people. You may have no compassion for them. That annoying person at work. That friend who has let you down over and over again. That person at church that makes you feel uncomfortable. That beggar that you see on the side of the road every single day. Well, they may be Jesus' sheep too. Some of you are thinking, I don't know if I can do that. I'm not Jesus. And that's exactly what the 12 disciples were thinking too. Which brings us to our last point, our infinite resources. Look at verse 37. Jesus told his disciples, you give them something to eat. And this is an impossible command, because there's 10 to 20,000 people here in this retreat site. And to give you a picture of what, how outrageous that number was, there's two towns near this area where Jesus and his disciples were, Capernaum and Bethsaida. Those towns had 2,000 to 3,000 people each. So this was a massive crowd of people. Even if they sent the crowd away to get food, there may not have been enough food in these towns to feed them. The idea that 12 disciples could feed this crowd was ridiculous. It was outrageous. And you could hear their disbelief. They asked Jesus, shall we go and buy 200 denarii worth of bread and give it to them to eat? 200 denarii is around 8 months' wages. And so in Tri-City terms, this is around $65,000. Imagine spending $65,000 of your own money on dinner for strangers. They didn't have that kind of money. And even if they did, they wouldn't have spent it on dinner. Jesus told them to find out how much food they had. They came back and they said, look, we've got 5 loaves and 2 fish. This is all we have. And they thought that that would end the conversation. Look, Jesus, this is all we got. We don't have $65,000, we don't have 200 denarii, and we don't have food for this crowd. The fish were probably not even, like, you might be thinking trout. The fish were sardines that people in the ancient Near East used as a spread to flavor the bread. This was not enough food to feed the crowd. The 12, they didn't have the resources to feed the crowd, and that's exactly what Jesus wanted them to understand. His core message, Jesus' core message, is not, you can do it if you try. How committed are you? How loving are you? Jesus' core message is, you can't. You can't do it, but I can. So trust me. You can't do it, but I can. So trust me. We need to tell God, I can't, but you can. Those two phrases next to one another, I can't, but you can, will change your life. God, I can't stop worrying about my finances. I can't. I've tried and I've tried and I've tried and I can't. But you can change me. God, I can't stop drinking too much. I've tried to quit over and over again. I can't. But you can. God, I can't rekindle that love that I once had with my spouse. I don't know if we're ever going to go back to what we had. But you can change us. You can heal us. I can't. But you can. Some of us are too busy avoiding the things that we can't do because we're unwilling to say that God can. We can go to church regularly. We could even study the Bible. We could go to a community group. We could even volunteer and serve. We could donate money to help the poor. These are things that we can do. We can get along with people who are likable. We do these things well, but we avoid the things that we can't do. Loving our enemies, living selflessly, suffering for our faith. We never reach the end of ourselves. We never reach the point where we say, I can't, because we're afraid to say, God, you can. And we will never experience the fullness of God's grace and his resources and his power until we reach that point where we feel like we need him, where we're saying, God, I can't, but you can. I love how Jesus chooses to use these irritable disciples. Man, if I was Jesus, I would have given up on these disciples a long time ago. Like, have you ever tried working with people who consistently tell you, I can't? I can't, I can't. Well, forget it. I'll find someone else, right? But Jesus doesn't do that. He doesn't find another 12 disciples. He says, you guys are a dime a dozen. I could find 12 other people to do what you do. He doesn't do that. What does Jesus do? He uses them. He uses them, and he uses them to feed 10,000, 20,000, over 200 denarii worth of food. The 12 couldn't feed the crowd, but Jesus could. They told Jesus, we can't do this. We can't afford it. We don't have enough bread. We don't have enough fish. Then Jesus just tells them to organize the people in groups. Can you do that? Can you organize the people in groups? Like, I guess we can do that. I don't know where this is going. I don't know what good it will do. And then he prays. He breaks the bread, and he starts passing. He says, start passing. They're like, we're going to run out really quick. Can you just pass it out? Okay, we can pass it out. And as they passed out the bread, as they passed out the fish, they realized that they were not running out. And the more they gave, the more they had. Following Jesus sometimes feels like it is pointless. You feel like this is going to go nowhere. And Jesus, all he asks for is obedience. He just says, trust me, follow me, just give. And you're going to find that I will supply you even when you feel like you will have nothing left. Because that is who I am. I am compassionate. Do you think I will have no compassion for you? Do you think my compassion is only for other people? Do you think I will leave you alone, empty, bankrupt, hopeless, hungry, starving? Do you think I will not refresh you? Do you think I will not care for you? Do you think I will not give you what you need? Jesus, in his incredible compassion, chooses to use these irritable disciples in an irritating situation. And at the end of it, everyone has had more than enough to eat. More, far more than 200 denarii worth of food. Far more than $65,000 worth of food. They had leftovers, 12 baskets full of leftovers. And everybody ate until they were full. They say that there's no such thing as a free lunch. Someone always has to pay. And on the surface, this meal looks free. Jesus didn't pay for the bread. He didn't pay for the fish. He miraculously multiplied it. He produced it out of thin air. It looks like it didn't cost anyone anything. But it wasn't free. The bread was free, but Jesus' compassion wasn't free. Because Jesus' compassion ultimately cost him everything. Mark hints at this when he describes the way that Jesus multiplied the food. He could have done so many things. Jesus could have waved his hand and all the food just multiplied. He doesn't do that. What does Jesus do? He breaks the bread and he gives thanks and he distributes it to the people. And this is exactly what Jesus will do on the night before he's betrayed. He will break the bread, he will give thanks, and he will distribute it to his disciples. It's a picture of the Lord's Supper. It's a picture of his last meal. It's a picture of that sacramental meal that God would give his church to remember how Christ died and rose again to feed us and to show his compassion. In Mark chapter 14, verse 22, Jesus does that. He takes the bread, he blesses it, he breaks it, and he gives it to his disciples. And he says this, he says, "Take, this is my body." Jesus is saying, this is what my compassion costs. It costs me my body. I must be torn. I must be broken. I must suffer. I must die. On the cross, there was no compassion left for Jesus, not from his Father who loved him with perfect, infinite love through all eternity past. But on that cross, Jesus experienced the full extent of God's judgment, his righteous and holy anger, and he received it in our place. The compassion of God is costly. It costs God everything. Do you realize what this means? It means that you can afford to show a lot more compassion than you think you can. We're like a four-year-old who has won the lottery. Can you imagine what it would be like for a four-year-old? I mean, legally, four-year-olds can't play the lottery, but like, imagine if they could. Right? A four-year-old wins the lottery. What are they going to do with that money? Well, they might buy all the toys their hearts desire. Right? They might go to all the movies that are playing in the theater. They might buy tickets to Disneyland. Right? The imagination of a four-year-old can maybe spend about $1,000 max, maybe $2,000. They don't even know how to spend $1 million. God has given us infinite resources in Jesus. And we spend a little compassion here and a little compassion there, and we're afraid to spend big. We have little imagination for how much compassion we can have on people when they irritate us. We're afraid of loving people who are difficult to love. We feel like we have too much to lose. We don't realize how much Jesus has given us. We think we can only spend $1,000 when God has given us millions, hundreds of millions. Do you understand how much it costs God to show you compassion? Do you understand how much he loves you? Do you understand how much you are worth to him? You are worth more than 200 denarii. You are worth more than your salary. You are worth more than all your assets. You're worth more than you can possibly imagine. You could spend eternity thinking about how much you are worth to God in Jesus Christ, and you will never reach the bottom. You will barely scratch the surface. So who are the people who irritate you? You will never get over your irritation by telling yourself you need to be more loving. The only way to do it is to be loved. And so receive the love of your Savior, the infinite love of Jesus this morning. And let him satisfy your soul and go and give more compassion to others than you ever thought you could. Let's pray.